Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and we'll take this time to thank you for joining me for this live chat on today's top international education news, but also looking forward to hearing what you have to say today about these issues and how they might impact you in your jobs in international education. And as always, we want a quick shout out to everybody who subscribed to our podcast of this midweek roundup. And it's always a pleasure coming to you in your downtime or as you're working out, whatever it may be. But please, thank you again for subscribing. The numbers have been increasing week to week. I hope you're finding this information valuable and as a resource for you and a better understand the increasingly global competitive world we live in when it comes to international student mobility. So thanks again for being here. For those who aren't familiar with the Roundup, we do this every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and it's a chance to just highlight three issues that we see as particularly important for international educators in the United States to be aware of, to further your knowledge, but also to potentially see opportunities to how you position your own institutions in the global marketplace for international students. So what does that look like for you? For us in the United States, we know we are and have been the number one destination for international students for as long as we can remember. But it is an increasingly competitive world we live in. And part of the resources we develop here at the SMIE Consulting beyond this roundup is our weekly newsletter that takes a look, brief looks, and some of our unique spins on how different news stories that play out in both social media terms and international education terms, how they might impact what you do on your own campuses and with your organizations when it comes to international students and enrolling them on your campus. I'll also cover sometimes study abroad issues, and also social media is a big piece of our newsletter. I've just posted the link to that in our Facebook page comments section for the live video chat. And invite you to definitely check out the newsletter and feel free to subscribe. It's free. Comes to your mailbox on Monday mornings, 9 a.m. And then we feature three of those stories each week here on the Midweek Roundup. So thanks again for being a part of this. We're going to start today with two of our competitor markets today. We're going to look at Australia and Canada first off, and then we'll finish up with a look at China's changing outward student mobility destinations. We'll look at that, where they're heading in increasing numbers, and how that might impact a lot of countries that have become very dependent on China for international students, and perhaps your university is one of those institutions that has relied a lot on China in the past. So let's start off with Australia. A couple news stories here that are shedding some light on what's going on down under. First is a University World News piece that looks at, it's called Bumpy Road Ahead for Australian Universities, and it talks about a number of issues, not just international students, but it talks about the changes in Australia since the late 80s, with they've been driven a lot by neoliberal forces, underpinned market-driven approaches, according to the article. And that was an understanding by Australia back in the early 2000s that they needed to be more competitive internationally, something that I think only in the last few days or years the U.S. is beginning to realize that, at least on a more national level. Now, what's happened in Australia, and for those not familiar, the country itself is fairly unique. It's a smaller country in terms of its international, in terms of the universities and colleges that it operates. It has, in terms of higher education institutions, colleges, universities as we know them in the United States, they have only 43, and that's actually a pretty high number. I've seen 35 to 38 in the past. But 43 compared to other national systems, compared to 164 in the UK, and this number of 2,832 degree-granting institutions in the United States is way off. It's almost double that, so well over 4,500. But its universities that it does have, because there are so few of them, are very large. Their average size is 34,300 is their average enrollment. compared to 13.7 for the UK and 4,500 for the US in terms of size of student populations. All the universities are research intensive, whether public or private, and all universities are comprehensive and offer doctoral programs. Those are certainly their strengths of the Australian system, but they're also, according to the author of the article, that want some of their weaknesses. So what is interesting about this piece, it outlines something we're not too unfamiliar with here in the United States, and that has driven a lot of institutions, particularly state universities, to look outside their own borders, state borders, to drive students to their campuses and oftentimes overseas. When demographics are going south and not in a positive direction for universities, they broaden the scope of where they look for students. And that's no different in Australia. And that's they're experiencing a similar demographic decline in terms of domestic students that are coming through the pipeline. So what a lot of universities, and this has driven a lot of universities in the past few years, is to ramp up their international efforts. The challenge is they're getting to capacity, and we've talked about that here a number of times in terms of their over-reliance on international students at Australian universities. And you look at the average percentage of campuses that are international. You look at schools like University of, well, let's see, where the ones that they have here. They have University of Melbourne, yeah, that they now receive 33% of their total revenue for the university is coming from international students. And looking back to 1995, so a little over 23 years ago, that number was only 4.5%. So the dependence on international students as a source of revenue is just tremendous. And looking on an average scale for Australian universities, in the early 90s, they were looking at less than 6% of Australian universities' revenue came from international students. And now, as a country, their universities are averaging 23% of their total revenue. So it's not just the bigger names institutions, it's all of the universities averaging 23% of their revenue for the institutions are coming from international students. And right now in Australia, China, we'll talk about China a little bit later as well, but it's a dominant force in Australia as well. 33% of international students are from mainland China, up from 4.6% in 2000, so less than 20 years, and it's just increased tremendously. So what are the challenges really for Australia, and what are some of the bumps ahead in the years to come? So it's a lot of it focuses on their domestic challenges in terms of fee paying markets is limited in terms of what they can charge. The Australian universities are likely to face tightened government financial support. They've already seen a lot of reductions over the last couple decades. So it's going to put increasing financial pressure on these institutions. The author indicates that universities will be shutting down programs in which student demand and disciplines has decreased. So there's a lot of folks who've seen that here in the U.S. At smaller liberal arts colleges, they're doing what they can to survive. You see even schools that have huge endowments, like University of Tulsa, big stories over the last couple of months from there. Where you see them shutting down a lot of their humanities programs and social science programs that weren't drawing the students any longer. So that's something similar certainly going on down in Australia. So we'll be certainly keeping our eye on that one. But there's some challenging times in Australia. But I know there's incredible leadership through their International Ed Association in Australia that is providing and has government support in providing international education strategy for the country, and their recognition, as this author addresses in the University World News piece, that there are a lot of the regional institutions in Queensland, Tasmania are the worst performing institutions when it comes to international students. Presence, but also revenue-wise, economically, they're struggling the most as well. So one institution, there's been a lot of reports in the last year of institutions that were cutting corners. to increase their international student revenues, to increase their enrollments, obviously. One of those institutions that made was certainly all over the news in the last year was Murdoch University. Murdoch is had been a very highly regarded institution in terms of internationally. They have been called out. There was a whistleblower from their faculty that called out the university for kind of some practices that were significantly questioned ethically by a lot of observers in the market. And that's this has led to a lot of challenges that the university saw as from this professor's claims, showing that that this was a real embarrassment for the university, and they actually took this professor to court. And there was a recent article in Macro Business out of Australia, very edgy kind of. Typically, I wouldn't say anti-international student outlet in Australia. They have taken the professor's side, and so certainly I do on that front. Is that that the professor was found by Australia's Department of Home Affairs to be he cannot be blamed for the institution's visa downgrade, which has been blamed for substantial loss of international student fees. And as a result, this Australian Department of Home Affairs has exonerated the professor. So that's really, really good for Dr. Schrader Turk, and really encouraged to see him being the kind of a stain that the university tried to pass on him has been removed. Certainly the damage has been done, but my goodness, when you have a university coming after you, that's pretty dangerous in terms of what the outcomes could potentially be. So Murdoch University is considered an immigration risk rating of level 3 by the Department of Home Affairs, and that's the worst possible rating for universities in Australia. It's one of only two universities, Australian universities, to have that level risk. So it has taken a hit. They apparently the revenue that they're bringing in is from international students is 14.8% lower than forecast, and that will have millions of dollars of impact on that institution, and this is really I think a sign of maybe the bottoming out of where Australian institutions have realized, okay, we've pushed the needle too far internationally, we're going to need to dial it back and really focus on our core products, core services for international students. And appreciate John and Mike joining in the chat today. Hope you're well, and looking forward to any contributions you would like to make to the conversation here. That's great. But certainly, with regard to what's happening in Australia, I think you're now seeing perhaps a wake-up call has certainly been issued to a lot of institutions that might have had have been using some questionable practices. And for my money, it's they're probably seeing going to have some. There's going to be some impacts in the next year or two down under. But I think overall, as a country, having a national international ed policy that we've profiled before on the roundup will certainly help them regain their position. Not that it's suffered at all. They certainly will regain the strength of their market, and perhaps as many colleges in the U.S. are starting to do. To diversify where their students are coming from, because they're obviously heavily dependent on China, and that's something that we in the U.S. certainly know what they're going through on that front. Now let's shift gears and go north of the border. We're going to talk Canada for a little bit. Canada has certainly enjoyed quite a bit of success over the last 3 years, certainly since. Even before Donald Trump took office, Canada has had enjoyed the fruits of the bad fruit of U.S. Foreign policy over the last 3 or 4 years has certainly led to Canada's success. They've seen tremendous growth in their international student population over the last decade. Certainly the last 5 years have been phenomenal increases. So we're seeing a country now in Canada that is really getting their act together. It's not perhaps quite as sophisticated as the UK or Australia have had in terms of their overall government level policies, but certainly has developed a huge international student following. So a lot of that over the last few years has come at the expense of the United States in terms of the growth that we might have normally been experiencing has gone north of the border. We've seen cases of that certainly in India. We've seen it with Vietnam and with China as well and other countries. But those three have certainly boosted Canadian international student growth over the last 4 or 5 years. The real changes started in 2014 in Canada when immigration policy changes north of the border made it easier for students who were studying at publicly funded institutions to work and apply for permanent residency. And that's one of the things Canada has certainly going for it compared to the United States is that it's a much more streamlined process and a much quicker process, frankly, and transparent process for those that are looking to come to Canada to study initially, but eventually may want to settle down there and become permanent residents and have work opportunity after graduation and maybe even become citizens. That has allowed Canada's international student population to expand to what this article claims are more than 572,000 international students, and that's up 73% over the last 5 years. So during that, since those changes were made to Canada's immigration system. So they're certainly presenting a much more welcoming face in Canada, and that's led to certainly a lot of huge increase in post-secondary study into Canada. Now, what you're also seeing, though, where not so much at the university level, there are some institutions that are heavily international that have perhaps overdone it necessarily in terms of their overall balance at their institutions. But the real challenge, I think, with Canada's international student population has and is showing up at the college level or vocational level. There are community colleges in Canada. There are vocational colleges in Canada that have been attracting a large share of international student interest. Primarily because they are seen, and the article makes reference to this, we've talked about it before on the roundup, as edu-immigrants, that edu-immigrant clients, that if they can avoid school, and that's why they perhaps go to a lower-cost community college or vocational program, if they can avoid school and, as the article says, gain immigration status through work opportunities, that's what all of them would do, says Earl Blaney, a London, Ontario immigration consultant, who is also an educational agent in the Philippines. Having a study permit offers students, according to Blaney, direct access to employers for this purpose. So there are regulations, though, that being said, on students while they are in school. They cannot work more than 20 hours a week while school is in session, but they can, as opposed to the United States, can work off campus. They don't have to work on a university job. They can work anywhere. It doesn't necessarily even have to be related to their field of study. So there's a much wider scope for international students in Canada who want to work. So the challenge has been for these vocational colleges and smaller community colleges, they've just seen explosions in their international student numbers over the last 5 years, but their staffing hasn't always been able to keep pace with that. And part of that is monitoring requirements, which exist for immigration purposes, that they have to report enrollment statuses of their international students. That, according to the report from Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada, there roughly 10% of international students enrolled in post-secondary institutions are potentially not complying with conditions of their study permits for anything from academic suspensions to no-shows. That's the students, up to 10% that are enrolled in post-secondary institutions are not compliant. And that's out of the 572,000 international students in the country. But the problem is the numbers of students breaking the rules is likely higher, according to this article, because schools fail to report the enrollment status of up to 20% of international students. So fully a fifth of students, students are not being, international students studying in Canada are not being, having their enrollment status reported to the federal immigration officials. So what that means is, and this may go back to the staffing issues that we were talking about earlier, but there are some real challenges that this 10% not of being of students being non-compliant, that they're not, but also the university's not reporting the enrollment status because of no-shows and other things. There's some real challenges here, and one of my colleagues, who's a higher ed consultant in Canada, Alex Usher, this story actually came out in my Twitter feed today. He's responded. We had a little conversation about that, and he said this is the problem in Canada, that there are no punishments for institutions. There's no impact to them if they don't report. So whereas in the U.S. we all know about recertification requirements and our ability to continue to host international students, that's often held over our heads by immigration and custom ICE officials and USCIS that certify our institutions to be able to issue I-20s and DS-2019s and such. DS-2019s obviously are State Department, but there's much stronger government oversight, and my colleague Alex, he mentions this, that since there's no real problem, no real enforcement of any, and no real penalties for non-compliance on reporting your international student statuses, then a lot of these students kind of fall through the cracks, and some of them are doing it by design. But what this has also led to is that there have been a number of cases in 2018. Officials are checking schools' acceptance letters for international students that are used to apply for study permits. So there isn't an I-20 that's like in the United States that's generated that the student gets to apply for a study permit. It's just their offer of admission that they take. Of 10,400 acceptance letters that have been referred for verification, according to this article, since 2018, 12% or 1,240 cases were identified as fraudulent. So there are a number of students that have attempted to use faked acceptance letters to get in the country and get their get a study permit, enter the country, begin work, and kind of blend in as much as they can. So this is something that I think a lot of there's a lot of concern, certainly in immigration circles, certainly among colleges and even universities in Canada, that this could become a significant issue. So there's real challenges in terms of what this is going to look like. It's not just the number of students that are enrolling at these colleges in Ontario, and this is where the focus of this article has been, is that there are not even more colleges have opened in the last 5 years. So you've gone from 298 colleges in 2014 that are recognized schools to 420 in 2019. So an increase of over 120 in just 5 years. Institutions, an increase of 120. So this is something that certainly is going to raise some issues for Canada and amongst other colleges and universities. Again, this has been primarily at the college level, vocational and community college level, but not so much at the university level, but certainly significant issues as Canada experiences the growing pains that they have been in the last few years. What I'm going to end with today is one of those topics that we've talked about quite a bit on the roundup, and that's international students from China. Now, I'm looking at this time, this perspective is not just from the U.S., it's also from the other major destination markets for Chinese students in the English-speaking world. We're talking about the UK, we're talking about Australia, who are, as the US is, very dependent on those countries. We're also talking about Canada to a lesser extent. From those four countries that have seen huge jumps over the last two decades in the number of Chinese undergraduates coming to study on their campuses, They're now, as we've talked about with the open doors numbers last couple of weeks, those have been leveling off. The growth rates have been leveling off considerably here in the U.S., but that's also happening in Canada and Australia as well. that while Canada and Australia are setting out international ed policies nationally to diversify so that they're less less reliant on China as a source country for their international students. This report in University World News is something that's it's titled "The End of the Affair: Rethink China," and that's something that when you look at what China has become to those countries, where you see anywhere from a third to 38% of international students in UK, US, and Australia are from China. You look at and even Canada, who has seen a surge over the last 38% surge through the first half of 2018 for Chinese nationals getting study permits. It was flat this past year, so through August. So what we're looking at is, okay, well, if they're not, there's still hundreds of thousands of Chinese students looking to study abroad, where are they going? And why is it, why the shift is, but probably part of this is driven by government propaganda to diversify where their students are going in terms of their experiences. And we've talked about the Belt and Road Initiative here in the past as well, in terms of what China, the national the communist government in China has done over the past decade to fund $13 trillion worth of projects in the developing world in South Asia and Africa in order to increase their soft power influence. There's been elements of education in many of these countries that they've been putting together these projects for. A lot of that has involved bringing the students from those countries where these students, where China's investing in, bringing them to China, offering them scholarships to come to China and deepen the ties between those two countries. So that's been happening. So those are becoming other destination markets for Chinese students as well. So there's Chinese students going to those markets. What the article seems to point out is that while none of the four major countries that we're talking about, U.S., Canada, U.K., and Australia, are probably looking to lose their, are going to become suddenly less dependent on China. In terms of they'll still be the number one market for a good many years to come because of the just percentage gap they have over second or third place. They are looking at more diverse countries. So part of what I've always talked about is here on the Roundup is, and with SMIE Consulting, is institutions in the U.S. need to understand this concept that not only is it us against the U.S., against the U.K., Canada, and Australia, maybe even New Zealand for in certain markets for students, we're competing against the rest of the world too. You're competing against Germany. You're competing against regional hubs in Southeast Asia that might be attracting Chinese students as well. There are other in-country options that have developed, obviously. So there's a lot of, they've got it, frankly, the world is theirs if they want it in terms of where they can go because they're highly sought after as a revenue stream for education markets around the world. So it's really really a challenge in terms of where China is going to end up in the years to come, but certainly one we'll be talking about here on the Roundup for many years, I'm sure. But we'll certainly be following more on what's happening in China. Obviously, there's some conferences coming up this weekend with ARC and ICEF down in South Florida. Wish my colleagues who are attending best of luck with those. Always prove to be very productive days, I'm sure, and I hope there's some good outcomes coming out of that. We'll be following the Twitter feeds from those. But for now, that'll be the end for today's Midweek Roundup. Thanks again for joining us today. But also subscribe to the newsletter if you're looking for an archive of past editions, smieconsulting.org, and go to the subscribe page. You'll be able to see all the past editions of the Midweek Roundup, as well as our newsletter archive. So for now, have a great day and look forward to seeing you around. Cheers.